Of the community center, but also just below that, there's a pavilion, and that's where the shooting is going to have taken place. There were some individuals there that were playing dice while there was a men's basketball game that was taking place in the community center itself. And it was while a crowd had gathered to play dice in that small pavilion area.
A white car pulled in behind.
That it was a white Hyundai Sonata. This Sonata had been reported stolen from the Pensacola Police Department about 1 month ago. And it was this car pulls up, drives by one time, comes back, stops, and then three males get out and exit that car, one with a longer gun, assault type rifle, and two with handguns. And then they aim towards a number of people, a group of people that were in that small pavilion area there playing that dice game.
So if you don't know the Wedgewood Community Center, what he's describing is, if you knew it, it's very understandable. Basically, you have the community center itself, the building proper, you know, in which the activities happen, or in this case, the basketball game is going on. And then right outside, I mean, it's like the times that I have been over there for events and things, this is think of it as like the Ramada or the pavilion where people eat right next to the community center. You know, somebody will be barbecuing or grilling or whatever. And then there's this, I don't know, 40 foot by 30 foot kind of just, you know, slope roof kind of overhang open to the air. You just walk in and out from under it, but it's not attached to the building. It's just kind of next to the building where people eat so they don't get in the sun or whatever. That's where apparently they were playing dice. And so it wasn't really the community center. It wasn't really the basketball game. It was this, you know, this other place where the people are just, you know, milling about and probably gambling. I mean, you know, nobody plays dice in a pavilion outside the community center just because, you know, they want to play Yahtzee. I mean, that, you know, whatever you might think about, that's not what was happening. Almost certainly they were gambling, which is, you know, common enough for people in situations like this. Okay, so they're playing dice, they're gambling, whatever, outside in this area, and then this car pulls up, drives back and forth a couple of times. Three people get out, one person stays in the car, and the three people have guns.
As the three individuals had just left the car, and they're heading towards that pavilion area where there are some men and one child playing dice. There are a total of seven victims. Two victims are deceased. The deceased victims are 21 years old and 24 years old. The others are a 23-year-old, a 22-year-old, a 27-year-old, a 29-year-old, and unfortunately, an 11-year-old.
It's hard to process, right? It's hard to think about something like this taking place, and yet we have this problem. We have, you know, Wedgewood is it's a poor area. It's a black area. It's, you know, it became sort of famous a couple of years ago because of the problems with the, you know, the dump that was not run properly, that, you know, became an environmental hazard and people claiming that there were health issues. You know, the Wedgewood community has kind of gotten known for that, you know, over the last, well, as long as I've been here, basically 10 years. But, you know, it's a poor black community stuck in kind of a place where other people aren't. And there's a lot of borrow pits and things around there. And so here you've got, you know, bad things happening at the community center threatening the lives and the safety of everybody there. And, you know, they caught the car. They found the car. He says that basically the thing with the car is that, you know, the criminals have gotten savvier and savvier that, you know, they steal cars to do the crime so they can't trace the car back to the criminals, right? Well, now they're not just stealing the car same day and then doing the crime later that day. They're stealing the car and then stashing it for a month and then they're doing the crime later.
I was stolen. It was stolen about a month ago. And as I mentioned to you before, this is what they're doing. They're stealing a car, they're hiding it for a couple weeks or a month, and then they'll use it whenever they need it. So it'll be at their beck and call, more or less.
So who can help solve the problem, right? I mean, there's going to be some kind of video, as you saw the video of the guy, or the pictures anyway, of the, you know, guys getting out of the car, but they're heavily concealed, so it's hard to tell who they are. But stuff like this doesn't happen and nobody understands, right? There are people who know. And he says, look, somebody needs to talk. It's that simple. If you care about your community, if you have information, if you want this kind of nonsense to stop, and surely not all of the people who know want this to continue. There may be some. I mean, certainly there's some who are involved or who are aware or who think this is just the way it is. But then there are other people who know something and want it to stop and either don't say because they're afraid of retaliation against them or, well, who knows why they don't. But they don't, and that's a problem.
But let's talk about personal responsibility. Let's talk about the community involvement. Let's talk about why this took place. Let's talk about the fact that someone knows who these three people are. Someone knows where these people stayed last night. Someone knows that there was a white car that they've been driving. One of them have been driving. Someone knows that. And when I talk about personal responsibility, I'm not just talking about the ones that pulled the trigger. I'm talking about the ones that knew about this, that knew about it beforehand, the ones that knew about it after the fact, the ones that are helping them, the ones that loaned them a car, the one to help them steal a car, whoever stole the car, all of these things. I'm talking about the family that noticed a white car that they had never seen before right next door or parked in the back. And they think, you know, what's going on with that white car? And give us a call. That's what I'm talking about when I say personal responsibility.
Right. There are certainly people who have information. And they need to come forward. Because you cannot do everything as a government. Right? The government in this case, remember, you know, law enforcement is part of the government. The government is doing a lot. You know, nobody can fault the sheriff's department for not doing enough to create a healthier culture, whether it's the Blazer program for boys and girls, or, you know, whether it's all the events they do in the community or the various kinds of mentoring that they have going on. I mean, Chip Simmons is leading an agency that is relentlessly trying to improve things in this county. But they cannot do it all.
Because, yeah, we can do all the mentorship programs in the world, and we do. I have Commissioner May here with me, and he does a ton of mentorship programs, a ton of athletic events. Because when we had our roundtable, gun violence roundtables a couple years ago, everyone said, we need more things for the kids to do. Well, there are things for the kids to do. But there's still these people that are out there that are just destroying our neighborhoods. 7 people were shot. 2 of them were killed. One of the people that were shot was 11 years old.
And look, even if there weren't things to do, it's not like it's the fault of lack of community activities that people decide to take up guns, right? I mean, that, you know, there's no straight line there. And the idea that everything else in the world is hunky-dory in this community and around these people, except for the fact that there just aren't enough, you know, picnics and dodgeball games. There's a whole lot more to it than that, right? And here's an example of the whole lot more to it. Now, this is, when it comes to things that are discouraging out of this incident, the death of 2 people, the wounding of 5 others, including a very young child of 11 years old, that's atrocious. So this is even more frustrating because of the level of the evil and atrocity that this facilitates.
Now talk about the community working, talking about the community helping us out, talk about personal responsibility, community responsibility. Let's talk about the fact that there's a mother that will not let her child talk to law enforcement. That was there. There's a witness at this situation, and they would not let her talk to law enforcement.
What do you think the cops are going to do? What do you think the sheriff's office is going to do? Now, listen, I'm not naive. I understand that maybe this mom is concerned about the safety of her child if her child talks to the cops, or her, right? I understand. I do. I also understand that our cops are pretty smart, you know, and they have ways of doing this better. They are well aware of the potential danger if that's the issue. Okay? But at some point, you have to talk to the police. Because that's the only way it stops. And I'll say it this way. I think Sheriff Simmons, especially because he so deliberately works with his very good friend, Lumen May, they are very genuinely good friends in real life, you know. This is smart to involve him because Lumen has high credibility in the black community. Everybody knows him, and he knows everybody. And it's his district, okay? He's my district commissioner, too. And so bringing him in to talk about this and to repeat the message of talk to the police, I mean, of any law enforcement agency you can imagine, I think the Escambia County Sheriff's Office has sort of, you know, highest marks of trying to reach out, be credible, and help people and protect them and be upright and do everything they can possibly do in the right way, including bringing in, you know, one of the key black leaders in the community to reinforce the message.
Let me just stop for a moment and say we need the community help. We can no longer be plagued by this senseless act of violence. Law enforcement cannot enforce the law unless they're informed.
Yeah. And so trying to make sure that people are willing to come forward is, I mean, I'm glad he said this message, and he says it repeatedly.
We can't believe that there's not someone out there with information that can bring these people to justice. We're not just calling on county commissioners, elected officials, and the sheriff department. We're calling on this community. These senseless acts of crime has to stop.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I'm frustrated with them because you see this happening and happening and happening. And, you know, what can really be done? Well, you know, there's a short-term solution that isn't a solution, but at least it prevents, you know, if we can't get people safely to gather together, well, we just won't create a place where they can gather together.
We have closed the facility due to the systemic problems that we've had. We are going to investigate it. We're going to make sure that protocols were followed, that security was taken, law enforcement was informed, and that our staff was informed. As of today, we don't have all those answers. Our staff has worked diligently all night and all this morning trying to find out exactly what happened, what events were taking place, who organized the events, who were the organizers, who was responsible, and what plans were implemented for the safety of the citizens of Escambia County in that Wedgewood community.
Now, I think some of that is, you know, he needs to talk, and so he needs to say things, and some of that's not really. But the general point that they're closing down the community center because they can't, you know, ensure that this is a safe place. I also not sure about that because, you know, they weren't inside, right? They weren't at the basketball game. They were outside. They were, you know, shooting dice or whatever they were doing. And other people came up. Now, what would those guys have done if they had found them not outside at the dice game but inside? Or did somebody tip them off that they were outside at the dice game and therefore an easy target? You know, these are all questions I have, too. I'm sure the law enforcement is trying to figure all of this out. I don't know that closing down the community center solves a lot. But you do have this connection between events, activities, crowds, sports, drugs, gangs, violence. That's the reality. You know, when we talk with the sheriff about these big gatherings of people, these impromptu or sometimes these annual gatherings of people, it's always the same story. Giant group of people gets together. Everything's good for a while. Then somebody says something. Somebody lips off or looks at somebody's girl, or somebody was the person that was involved in this beef from a month ago, and suddenly they're here, and somebody calls some buddies, and they show up, and they've got their guns, and then you've got a gunfight. That's become kind of the norm. Now, this isn't exactly that necessarily, but, you know, that pattern we've seen so many times. So what do you do? Do you ban the gatherings? Well, the sheriff's department's kind of been doing that, but, you know, sort of making it so that people don't want to have the gatherings, right? You know, because if you have a lot of law enforcement around, they're not so eager to do their thing anymore. Party's not a party with all the cops around, from these people's point of view. And that's a solution, too. But that doesn't solve the underlying issue of people not willing to solve the problems when they happen, people not willing to cooperate with the law enforcement when shootings take place. And you can't make them. Not really. I mean, you would think that the value of cooperation is at its peak right now. And they still won't cooperate. So what else can you do exactly? 524 on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay.
Did you receive a call or message that mentioned Social Security and demanded immediate action? Did the caller know your social security number or other personal information and tell you that your social security number had been used in connection with the crime? Did you feel worried that your social security number might be suspended, your bank account might be frozen or seized, or you could be arrested? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, demand your personal information or instant payment, email or text you pictures or documents, or use a real government official's name to gain your trust. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Do not be fooled. Hang up. Ignore them. Report this criminal activity to the Social Security Administration Office of the Inspector General at oig.ssa.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Tune in today at 10 to the Pensacola Expert Panel when guests from Pensacola State College will be on the show talking about registration, campus tours, financial aid, certificate programs, baccalaureate programs, and everything in between. And 92% of students graduate loan-free. You won't want to miss this show on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
I occasionally have nerve discomfort in my hands, so the things I love to do...
Let's play something, Grandma!
...became difficult as I got older.
If you have occasional stabbing and burning in your hands and feet, try Nervive Nerve Relief. Nervive's clinically studied dose of alpha-lipoic acid reduces occasional nerve discomfort in as little as 7 days with continued daily use. Say yes to healthy nerves with Nervive Nerve Relief.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Ooh, I'm so ready for this weekend away with my girls.
Hey, hit the road. How about some free gas?
Free gas? How?
Try new Febreze car for some serious freshness and you can win gas for a full year. Visit Febreze.com to learn more.
Say less.
You may not win, but you're going to have a fresh-smelling whip.
Thanks, DJ Fresh. Now how about some music?
Hey, yo, this next one goes out to new Febreze car for giving you a chance to win free gas. La,
la, la, la, la. No purchase necessary. Must be 18 to enter. In 731-24 for rules and how to enter, visit Febreze.com.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
If you're really a gamer, which means, I assume, if you recognize that sound, you also in your head started to hear the as it displays the level counters in whatever level of Galaga you're on. 527 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, some Pennsylvania law enforcement members say federal officials failed to properly prepare them for the Butler Township Trump rally earlier this month. Beaver County SWAT sharpshooter Jason Woods told ABC News his team was supposed to get a face-to-face briefing from Secret Service agents prior to that campaign event where the attempted assassination happened. But he says that briefing never happened. The local officials also saying that they sent photos of gunman Thomas Crooks into the command prior to that shooting and never received a response.
Yeah, listen to him. I have got the clip here.
Those were the wrong locations.
Could you ever tell anybody or call the Secret Service and say, I don't know if this is the best place for me?
No, we had no contact with the Secret Service at all. We were supposed to get a face-to-face briefing with the Secret Service snipers whenever they arrived, and that never happened. So I think that was probably a pivotal point where I started thinking things were wrong because that never happened and we had no communication with the Secret Service.
You had no communication with the Secret Service at all on that Saturday?
No, not until after the shooting, I believe. Yeah.
And by then
it was too late.
Yeah.
My God.
The more that comes out about this, the crazier the whole thing gets. You just have to think, how could the Secret Service be that bad?
Yeah.
Delta Airlines reportedly seeking compensation from Microsoft and CrowdStrike after their global software outage earlier this month. CNBC reporting that Delta has now hired a law firm and they're going to pursue damages due to the cyber outage. And Team USA adding 8 more medals on Monday and continues to lead the overall standings in Paris. Americans have now won 20 total medals, including 3 gold, 8 silver, and 9 bronze.
USA, USA, USA. I don't know why we say it that way. Not everybody does. David, thanks so much for the update. 529 News Radio, Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Somebody texts in these poor communities, no one even questions why the child is riding a new bike that they've never seen and didn't buy. From a young age, no one questions crimes or cooperates with the law enforcement. I will say this. There is definitely a cultural understanding gap. You know, middle-aged, prosperous, well-educated white guy on the radio talking about what poor black people in a crime-ridden community should be doing. I definitely don't understand how their lives and their culture works. I do. That's a problem for me, even in talking about it. I agree.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. President Biden says 18-year Supreme Court terms instead of lifetime appointments would be more fair. He also wants a code of ethics for the court and a constitutional amendment to overturn the decision granting former presidents broad immunity from criminal charges.
No one is above the law. And for all practical purposes, the court's decision almost certainly means that a president can violate their oath, flout our laws, and face no consequences.
He spoke at the LBJ Presidential Library in Austin, Texas. Former President Trump on Fox.
All of the things he's done that are so bad, he desperately wants immunity. There's no way he would write off immunity.
His running mate, J.D. Vance, campaigns in Nevada and California today. Vice President Harris has a rally in Atlanta, Georgia. Organizers of a new group called White Dudes for Harris says more than 180,000 people joined a Zoom video conference call last night, raising nearly $4 million. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio Pensacola. I'm David Wayne. Right now it is partly cloudy. We've got 80 degrees in Pensacola this morning. The Escambia Sheriff's Office still investigating that shooting at the Wedgewood Community Center on Sunday.
There are a total of 7 victims. 2 victims are deceased. The deceased victims are 21 years old and 24 years old. The others are a 23-year-old, a 22-year-old, a 27-year-old, a 29-year-old, and unfortunately, an 11-year-old.
Sheriff Chip Simmons there from a press conference yesterday, and he says the gunmen were driving a Hyundai that had been reported stolen out of Pensacola several weeks ago. That vehicle has been recovered. So far, still no word on suspects. And Simmons is asking anybody with information to contact the Escambia Sheriff's Office, or you can call Crime Stoppers. There's a new floating dock open at the Baghdad Mill State Park, the 300-foot dock close to where Pond Creek meets the Blackwater River. It's the first portion of Phase 3 of a park update plan. Officials say it'll give boaters a new place to park and access the historical park. The dock was paid for with sales tax dollars and a land and conservation grant. The Escambia Sheriff's Office says a 44-year-old man is now facing charges for killing his 70-year-old mother over the weekend. That happened at a home on Fremont Avenue. Investigators say they were alerted by somebody from out of state who had talked with Christopher Booth. That person said their friend may have killed his mother. When deputies arrived at the home, they say they found bullet holes in the door, and they found the woman's body with at least one gunshot and about a dozen stab wounds. Booth now remains in the Escambia County Jail with no bond. And an Escambia County man charged for a fatal DUI crash that happened last November. 31-year-old Casey Folds was arrested yesterday on DUI manslaughter and DUI causing serious injury charges. The crash happened on Chemstrand Road. FHP says Folds went off the road last November 13th, then swerved back on, which caused a crash with another vehicle and a motorcycle. The driver of the other vehicle died from their injuries. Troopers say Folds' blood alcohol level was 0.315 at the time of that crash. A man convicted of murder in Marion County, a step closer to being put to death. Governor Ron DeSantis signed a death warrant yesterday for Lauren Cole. He killed 18-year-old FSU student John Edwards while he was camping with his sister at Ocala National Forest in 1994. Cole was also found guilty of sexual battery against Edwards' 21-year-old sister. The death warrant calls for the 57-year-old Cole to be executed August 29th at Florida State Prison. He'll be the first person executed in the state this year. It is 5:34 right now at News Radio Pensacola. We do have partly cloudy skies, and it is 80 degrees in Pensacola, 81 in Gulf Breeze, 78 in Milton. Your next news at 6 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio Pensacola.
Email from school. How about the incident today?
Scary.
Tell me about it. Did you have any idea that was going on?
None. I mean, you saw Derek at the game last night, too. Did you have a clue?
No, but you know, teachers like me, parents, we don't always know as much as you guys do. Kids hear first about what's going on with other kids.
Half the time, it's rumors.
It can be hard to tell sometimes, but if you're ever concerned about a friend who's having trouble with alcohol, prescription drugs, bullying, violence, anything, you need to tell an adult. Mom or me, a teacher, coach, school counselor, someone you know and trust.
Dad, no kid is gonna tell an adult about that kind of stuff.
I get it, but if we don't know, we can't help. Speaking up about a problem, that's what helping a friend is all about.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Join Claimology Thursday morning at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Matthew Vanderford with Claimology will be talking about insurance claims. He'll be discussing storms claims, as well as the importance of being properly insured prior to a storm and inspections after a storm. Matthew will be taking calls to answer your questions, so you'll know what you need before the next storm arrives.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Did you know that with Pensacola Habitat for Humanity, home buyers can choose their location, floor plans, and even certain home features? It's true. With an affordable mortgage, you can build the home of your dreams, tailored to your needs and preferences, all depending on availability and qualifications. Don't wait. Start your journey to home ownership with Pensacola Habitat for Humanity today. Visit PensacolaHabitat.org to learn more and apply today.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
Most recently, a lot of people don't realize, is we sent Thor to Oklahoma for the tornadoes. I didn't know that. No. Yes, sir. So that's Thor fantastic. Thor went to Oklahoma for the tornadoes to assist the state incident management team to go up there and help those people recover from the tornadoes up there. Wow. It was north of Oklahoma City. So, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was in Oklahoma and in the Paul Huska area. So, anyway.
The God of Thunder went to Oklahoma? No. No, Thor is the incident command module, whatever you want to call it, that the Escambia County Public Safety Department has, that is kind of like our, you know, that's their command and control operation center. And it was used in Oklahoma recently. That's Eric Gilmore talking with Jeff Bergosh, his Coffee with the Commissioner last week. Also, the blue ambulances are in. And, you know, I'd kind of talk with Eric about this a little bit, that, you know, we order these ambulances and they get them. These are the ones that are wrapped Blue Angel style. And I was like, hey, can I come see him? And he's like, oh, they're in the shop. And I'm like, they're brand new. He's like, yeah, I know. Because we seem to be just, it's weird. Like, we had these Pierce fire trucks a couple of years ago where they were bad. They were just not manufactured properly. And, I mean, I remember deliberately going out of my way to try to warn other local agencies, like, hey, don't buy from Pierce because we had this problem in Escambia County. And one thing I thought was really weird, it just kind of surprised me, is how little communication there seemed to be between some of the different county resources when it came to stuff like that. Because, I mean, I literally would, you know, I'd hear in some meeting that somebody's like, hey, we're thinking about buying it. And I'd call them and be like, you need to talk to Escambia County and find out why not to buy this brand. And like, oh, I didn't know about that. I'm like, man, we've been reporting it. You know, but okay. I mean, you do what you can. And so I thought that was surprising. And then you get these new ambulances, they get them in. And they've got problems too. Like, they're not made right. And it's hard to know, you know, is this just like system-wide everything's bad anymore? You know, kind of like we're in Atlas Shrugged and all of the industrialists are just giving up and nobody's doing anything right anymore? Because it does kind of feel a little bit that way. I know a lot of this stuff really started during COVID when, you know, you had problems manufacturing and supply chain, you know, the mystery magic wand explanation of supply chain, even though it is actually an explanation, it still kind of became a little bit of a crutch for people to explain, well, supply chain, you know, that's why you don't have better stuff and you can't find good people to work and the quiet quitting and all of that kind of stuff. And again, in the end, what it produces is ambulances that are not right.
And the final question I'll ask you, the blue ambulance trucks, I know we had some issues. We had a couple of lemons in the batch. Where are we at on is it six or seven of those that we purchased?
We purchased eight of those, sir.
Eight of them
have been purchased. They all did get shipped back to either Ohio or South Florida because we didn't accept the work. It was below par, subpar work, honestly. And that's not so, you're paying that big a price tag. You want it right. So
yeah, absolutely.
We tried with the techs coming in town and working on them and turning them out. They didn't have a good shop. They didn't have a good enough shop. They had all these excuses. So load them up, ship them back to the factory, fix them, get them right. So they worked on all the punch list. Now, as they come back and then we run them, we're finding a couple of little things here and there that are not major, but they are on the road. Not all of them are on the road yet. They're still training some of the crews because it is a new truck. It mm-hmm. is a different, it's a different animal than what they've been driving with the internationals. So they have to go through an EVOC refresher with that vehicle. So we're getting those things turned out on the road. We have several on the road right now that you can see around town from time to time.
And I remember asking Eric about this, that it wasn't that the trucks weren't mechanically correct. You know, it wasn't like the engine was bad or the transmission was bad. The truck itself was fine. It was that the box that contains all of the necessary connectors and infrastructure to make it possible to carry the equipment that they need in order to properly do their job as, EMS, that was the stuff that wasn't quite right. So I don't know if that was sort of the base truck manufacturer or if that was whoever we used to contract to actually create the kit around the truck itself. But as you heard him say, you know, they sent it back because they tried to fix it here and then that wouldn't work. And so we sent it to them and then they did it and they sent it back to us. And even so, not everything is right as they're running around discovering this stuff. And it's very frustrating because, you know, you can't get this equipment, whether it's fire trucks or ambulances, you can't get it quickly. I mean, this stuff is taking way longer than you would expect. That's why a lot of times you hear, you know, these folks, they get excited because they managed to buy like the floor model, you know, the demo, or we built one for the New York Fire Department. That was the story with one of the engines we got not that long ago. They were building this one for the New York Fire Department and then they changed their mind, didn't want it. And so we just kind of got this one. Can we have it? Yeah. Okay, cool. You know, like that kind of a thing. But just basic equipment acquisition, even when the county commission makes a good choice to upgrade at long last in an election year, that doesn't mean the thing happens right away because you got to find somebody to buy it from. And then it's how long does that take? And then once you get it, is it right? No, it's not right. And then how long does it take to get it right? And, you know, I mean, these are the challenges you're dealing with. I know it's true in public safety with, fire apparatus and ambulances. I got to assume that we're dealing with this same problem across the board, that this is systemic, that, you know, we're dealing with it when it comes to like the new, electric buses that we're supposed to be getting. I'm betting that they're not going to be on time and I'm betting that they're not going to all work right just because that seems to be, you know, let's go to a different manufacturer and that doesn't solve the problem. You know, like this just seems to be the way things are, which is really sad. Now, one of the real bright spots in public safety over the last year has been this CORE program. That's the program where people overdose and we resuscitate with the Narcan and we take them to the hospital. And then we say, hey, you know, you want to stop this from happening anymore? And some people are like, no, I love it. And other people are like, oh, man, I would do anything. And we get them on a program where they kind of have to be mentored a bit. But, you know, it's basically using a different kind of drug protocol to make it so they don't want the drugs. And also so that their system doesn't, you know, enjoy it, right? It's kind of a preventative, but then also getting them into case management so that they can be, you know, get other resources that they might need to keep them out of the situations that lead them to drug overdoses eventually. It's called the CORE program, and we're one of the early adopters of this here in Escambia County. Now, Eric was saying that the funding has dried up a little bit, so that is a concern, but over the first year, pretty great success. This is something that Chief Torcel implemented or was, you know, crucial in implementing before he resigned for unrelated reasons.
Our CORE program, which was funded by the state of Florida and rolled out by Governor DeSantis to fight opioid usage. So we've been running just a little over a year, and I give some numbers here. And as of early this month, we had 641 people that we've encountered. Now that's people who have questioned the program, asked about the resources, what's going on. That's 641 people. Now of those 641 people, 136 individuals have taken us up on the offer of help.
So that's about 20%. You know, one in five have actually agreed. And that means that 80% of the drug overdoses who've had to be Narcan back to life, basically, or at least were close enough to it that they'd count as an overdose call. 80% of them are like, no, I'm good. Everything's fine. Nothing to see here. Which is discouraging, right? That you actually have a program that can help them get off the drugs and they don't want it. For whatever reason, they don't want it. But for the 20%, you're having, you know, 136 opt in. And, you know, that comes from a variety of mechanisms because, you know, sometimes people show up at the hospital. They don't always call EMS, that kind of stuff. But of those 136.
So I told you we had 136 that we inducted. That means people who wanted to get in the program, who wanted to go through a cleaning, get better. Of the 136, we have 115 that we have transitioned on for further care, that transitional care to Lakeview Center, which is our partner that takes on, we do the warm handoff to those folks over at Lakeview, and then they pick up the service from there. So we have an 85% success rate of people who wanted help that we've turned over to Lakeview for long-term care.
So that's also really good, you know? So only 20% of the people are saying yes, but of the 20%, 85%, right, are, you know, following through, and they're getting them off to Lakeview or Lifeview. You know, I guess Lifeview is kind of the new name for it. So that, if you're not great at math, that means in the end you got 17%, you know, 0.2 times 0.85. But that's still, hey, if it's 20 people and it's more than 20 people, you know, you're talking about 115 people that this program has. I mean, even if it only holds for like half of them, that's 50 people this program saved their lives. Or almost 60. I mean, that's no small thing. That's a big deal. So I think it's a great program. I'm glad that the county is doing it. DPS is doing it. Eric Gilmore and, you know, the program that was, like I said, started by Chief Torcel before he left. So, you know, kudos. Now, of course, the question, as I hinted at, is who's going to pay for that going forward? And I am sure that they are motivated to, you know, find some kind of grant funding, find some source of continuing to keep this funded, because it's one thing to talk about as a life-saving, which is good, okay? I mean, I don't want to understate that, but the reason that we did this was not just pure altruism. It wasn't just doing the good thing. Although, again, the folks in public safety, why do they do it? Because they want to help, right? So they see a problem, they figure out how can we solve it. There's also a broader question here, or a more, I don't know, complicated question of, what can we do to make sure that EMS is not having to hold calls and not be able to serve people when they call in for medical assistance because of factors, right? You know, educating people to not call EMS for stupid stuff is one thing, okay? Staffing up is another thing. Having more trucks is another thing. But also, if you can cut down on the demand for emergency service, right? Now, in part, that might mean, you know, getting drugs off the street, getting drug dealers off the street. That's a law enforcement function, right? Because if people are not able to get them, then they're not as much going to OD and you don't have to run as many calls. But this is another example of how can you affect the demand on EMS? Well, one way is if you take these repeat OD victims and you can get them cleaned up. Now, and, you know, so many of the times it is repeat customers, right? You know, we've been to this guy's house four times, okay? Well, if you can get him off the drugs, Now that's three or four future calls you don't have to run. So you're really saving your own resources by preventing them from putting the demand on those resources. You follow? So it's not just that this is good from a human perspective, but it's also good from a providing of services perspective, which ultimately means a cost, right, for the taxpayer. But, well, I mean, the user, because EMS is not funded by general revenue. But also, you know, just generally, okay, it's good for cost. But it's also good for being able to continue to provide better service, and you don't have to be stressed in your system and running, you know, hold the wall calls or we can't get to you kind of things, that sort of stuff. So, again, this is across the board, in my opinion, this is a very good thing. 550 on News Radio, and we don't, you know, don't always get to talk about the real good things that are happening in Escambia County, but this is one of those sort of absolute unmitigated good things, if you ask me. 437-1620, 437-1620. If you are considering the prospect of selling your home, what do you want? You want a realtor who is going to get you a good price in the shortest amount of time possible and get it all the way across the finish line, right? You run into problems, they know how to solve them, hiccups and road bumps and whatever. They know how to get around, you know, whatever's happening and get to the end of closing, right? And that takes experience. That takes knowledge. That takes having done it. Well, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they sold 175 homes last year. So they got across the finish line 175 times, 3.5 times a week. So do they know? Do they know how to solve the problem? Do they know how to solve unique circumstances? Like, I know one of the things Christina talks about is people who are going through a divorce. It's not pleasant. Nobody likes to think much about it. But if you're going through a divorce and you have to sell the home, two people who cannot get along also cannot get along as sellers, right? And so that can be a challenge. Well, she had a demand to, you know, like people asked her to do this. And she's like, well, what can we learn to do better about this? So they kind of went to classes and got training so that their people could really be experts at that one unique problem, because that's what it took to really serve the client. And that's what they kind of how they approach it. And she's done that, whether it's estates, you know, because same thing, you're dealing with people who don't always agree about what should be done with, you know, grandpa or dad's estate, same stuff. So the dedication to just being excellent at her craft is, you know, unmatched. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, 723-9158.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Iron Man. But 10 years ago, Chris was facing a very different story, because his kidneys were failing.
Basically, the doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant and if you don't do dialysis, you are going to die.
Fortunately, Chris received a second chance at life, made possible by an organ donor.
You know, your well-being changes from loss of hope to better times ahead.
More than 100 million people in America are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors. People of every age and ethnicity, because they believe it's the right thing to do. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
To me, the most important thing about being in the human race isn't winning. It's participating, living life to the fullest, emphasis on living. This is what makes life, life. Yet how much of life are we willing to miss out on? Untreated hearing loss affects our mobility. It increases the risk of falls by 50%. Good hearing health is essential to staying engaged and doing what we love. Hear well and stay vital. Get a hearing health check every year.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. Davis Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include two times Tuesday, six free shrimp added to the six-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimp-tastic Thursday, $5 off all you can eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit David's Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 is accepting applications for employment. Periodically, we have openings in sales, business, news, promotions, engineering, production, and programming. We'll keep your application for consideration when such an opening occurs. We also provide internships for qualified students. Apply online at News Radio 92.3 or at our studios at 7251 Plantation Road between 8:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. ADX Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
When you listen to News Radio 92.3 on Sundays, you get Christian Outlook at 7, Ask the Preacher at 8, Town Hall Review, Fox News Sundays, The Weekend, Tech It Out, and Gun Talk at 8.
Yes, even rich Corinthian leather.
Let it flow! Let yourself go! Slow and low, that is the tempo!
Good morning, 5:55 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's good to have you with us on a Tuesday. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
And a land and conservation grant. I'm David Wayne for the Cat Pack Morning Show.
He is David Wayne for the Cat Pack Morning Show.
You guys came to me early, didn't you?
What are you, moonlighting on me?
Well, you know.
I know. So in case you don't know.
It's a rough economy, and you got to have some side hustles, okay?
I just don't want to go to you and hear you talking to somebody about the fare they owe you and what tip it was for the ride to the airport.
Right.
No, David does news for us and for Cat Country, our sister station that's literally 40 feet across two rooms. So, yeah, every once in a while I catch him in the middle of something. Sorry about that, David.
Well, that is okay. I assume you were wanting some news headlines.
Sure. If you're up to it.
What's going on? Yeah, sure.
If not, we'll make do.
Well, Sangamon County, Illinois Sheriff Jack Campbell is asking for forgiveness. This is following that deadly shooting of Sonia Massey during a Department of Justice community listening session last night. Campbell said his department had failed Sonia and did not do their jobs. And she was shot and killed on July 6th by former Deputy Sean Grayson. A study conducted in California finding that exposure to wildfire smoke leads to a higher risk of being diagnosed with dementia. That study released this week on Monday. The Alzheimer's Association International Conference is where they released that information. Researchers say they believe the toxic chemicals that are found in wildfire smoke and fine particulate matter can damage the brain.
Yeah, I mean, not that surprising that, you know, smoke would be hazardous to your health. We know that this has an impact on firefighters, too. But, you know, interesting that it would be caused to dementia. That doesn't seem right. That's what you said, right?
Yeah, that's what this study says.
It's sort of an unexpected connection. I wouldn't have thought of that as being. I would think of, you know, lung and respiratory issues.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. But learning new things every day.
All right, David. Thanks so much for the update. 5:57. You remember you're watching Top Gun and think they had them in the new Top Gun. I'm just trying to remember. But in the original Top Gun, you had the F-14s, the Tomcats that the Navy pilots flew. And then you had the aggressor planes, the opposite side. They weren't really Russians. They were black planes with red stars on them, if you remember. They were F-5s is what those were, Tigers. And what's interesting is that the jets that became famous from that movie are now, and if I understand the story correctly, it might even be the ones that were flying in the movie, because these planes have been around for a long time. These are, like, long-lasting planes that were made, like, in the 60s and 70s. They don't make them anymore. But they're very basic. They're very functional. They don't exactly have the newest avionics or electronics or displays or anything, and they call them steam gauges. That's what they look like. But the F-5N Tiger II fighters are going to be used as aggressor opponents for the F-35s who are training on the East Coast. Now, they already do this on the West Coast, apparently, for the Marines, but Marine Corps Air Station Beaufort, South Carolina, they're going to be using them there. And, you know, this is an opportunity for F-35s to practice in adversary situations. So they currently have four as a part of VMFT 402's operations, but they're going to go to 10 or 12 eventually. They just got there from Yuma, Arizona. So, I don't know, just, you know, interesting little things. So if you're on the East Coast, happen to be, you look up in the sky and you see F-5s flying around fighting the F-35s, that's okay. They're practicing. Everybody needs their practice. 437-1620, 437-1620. Bands on the Beach. Tonight is a Tuesday. All day it's Tuesday. So tonight you've got Bands on the Beach performing, and that will be, July 30th is Tyler Mack. So Tyler Mack will be performing tonight. 7 o'clock, Gulfside Pavilion. Have a good time. Enjoy responsibly. No glass, but, you know, it is okay to have a drink as long as it's in a can, right? Have a good time, band from the beach.
Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.